Hi, this is Eric Armstrong, and I'm meeting today with Sean Kerwin and Teresa Chabilsky, and we're here to talk about their design work that's coming up this summer. Each of them are doing an interesting project in the same theater, two different shows produced in the Tom Patterson Theater at the Stratford Festival. We have first, Sean is doing Euripides' The Bacchae in a new version by Anne Carson, and that's going to be directed by Gillian Kiley. And then Teresa is doing The Madwoman of Chaillot by Jean Giraudoux, and that's directed by Donna Fiore. Sean's project will open first, and then Teresa's will open much later in the season, in mid-August. So I thought we could kind of come together, talk a little bit about the process of working on these shows and what it's like for you. So, you know, first of all, what's it like? What's different about working in a big theater like in this situation of being at the Festival Theater? Or not the Festival Theater, but in a festival like the Stratford Festival and working specifically in the Tom Patterson. Sean, what's your take on it?
Well, working at Stratford is wonderful because there are some amazing collaborators there to work with, and you have resources to play with, and it's quite luxurious compared to working in a lot of other theaters in the country. At the same time, it is a very large institution, and so there are certain bureaucracies that go along with that. So it takes a little while. If you've never worked there before, it takes a little getting used to. But if you know the structure of the environment, then it's just a question of working with collaborators to realize shows, and it's kind of wonderful as far as that goes. I would think one of the main things is that your show is not the only show being done. There are many, 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 many shows being worked on. So you have your list of things you're excited about that you want everybody to get excited about, and they have a million plates they're juggling in the air at the same time. So that is something that's particular to working with a large festival.
Teresa, do you have similar feelings about that?
Yes, no, I can repeat everything Sean said. And maybe I just talk a little bit about something that always fascinates me about Stratford as an institution and as a theater. In this country, we sometimes have trouble to bring audiences to our theaters in Toronto, and some shows that are amazing and quite interesting may not have audiences we wish they had. However, when you're in Stratford, there's two things that happens. First, you notice, especially when you actually work there later in the season, where most of the plays open, you see people going to theater twice a day, and there's five different venues, and they are going there in big groups. Like the biggest theater is 1,200 people, then there's 700 people, there's 400 people, there's studio space that is around 250, and each of those places are filled up twice a day through the whole week through 5 months. And you wonder, where is that audience in Toronto when we need them to? There's obviously tourism attached to that. There are people who make a point of coming to Stratford. There's a lot of tourists from U.S. There's a lot of people from other parts of the country coming. And it's a great event that way. So you feel that you're part of something special that way. And the other weird and spectacular feel that I always experience in Stratford and is that when you are in the building and most of the shops, most of the particularly wardrobe, when you're designing costumes, you spend most of the time in the main building, which is the festival building, it feels like you're in some sort of center of the universe. There is nothing else. Like actors, the moment you're actually doing your fitting, that sort of is the gravity in that fitting room with the actors that you doing this show. And everybody who is working on the show supports that notion, so that there is a bunch of people with amazing energy supporting your work and trying to make the best out of what their work is to actually put something on stage that is pretty spectacular. So I've never had that kind of feeling in any other shows. It's always interesting and theater is fascinating and we love doing it, but Stratford brings something. It's very tiring too, because you have to do it well and you have to like maintain that energy with you know 2,000 people. And the last thing I say is, when you look at the, there is a, it's not a program, it's sort of like a, it's like a book that is printed every year, documenting all the shows. It's like a memory documentation of everything. And the last 5 pages, in probably print 05, it has like 800 people working for festival. It's unbelievable. It's just like you think you there is like a small theater. No, it's the machine and the institution and an amount of people who work just for production is small, but there is a lot of people doing all kinds of other jobs. So it's a really great place to be.
So the actual theater itself is perhaps not the theater that people have in mind when they think of the Stratford Festival. I think most people have in mind the festival stage, which is that very specific design that we could talk about for a long time. But this is the former curling rink, and was it also
badminton
a badminton
court.
Club,
badminton
I think?
Court, yeah.
So it's a very long building, and it was adapted to be a theater 40 years ago, something like that?
I know. I first worked there in 1978, and it was being brought back to life. It had been sort of mothballed for a bit, and it had been the third stage when I worked there, and it was the third stage before that, but I don't know when it first became the third stage. I just know that when I came in 1978, it was being opened up again, and
right.
I don't know how long that dormancy period was.
So how would you describe it? Because it's often in three-quarter round, right, as opposed to fully in the round.
Well, now this year it is fully in the round, which is really exciting, and I think that came about out of a conversation for trying to sort out one of the shows last year. So I think this is the first time it's being used in the round for all the shows. And I think it's fabulous. It used to be that it was a very long thrust. There was a wall at one end. And when I worked in it before, that was how it worked. And the wall would change over the years in terms of what it looked like. But it was basically audiences along two very long sides and then a shorter end. And now in the round, it's much more... The seats are much more sort of evenly distributed, and
it's not an oval; it's more of a circular stage.
It's a large rectangle with diagonal corners.
Mm.
So
they serve almost like VOMs, the corners of the stage.
Yeah.
For entrances and exits.
And the basic stage itself is finished, not unlike the festival stage. So in this incarnation, it doesn't mean it's not going to get covered over or not, but the basic set is two steps up and a big, long sort of platform.
Fabulous. So, of course, approaching these two very different shows, you have thoughts about what you want of that space. Do you want to talk a little bit about your thoughts about space when you tackle a script like this? Teresa?
Yes, of course. I just wanted to add that to the information about the theater is that Stratford is building new theater at this location. They also wanted to check out what it means for designers to work in the round versus what was before. And they work with architects as we speak to design this new, probably very flexible and very modern building. They own the land and they try to do it really fast. And going back to us as people who kind of enter the space as we trying to make the show work in that space. I love that space. I just adore it. I think it's the for me the design is that whatever you design has to be simple first of all, because you cannot erect anything that will interrupt the viewing of the actors walking in the space. So it's that way is quite challenging. But the challenge is only sort of, the challenge gives you more ideas and an exploration of some other possibilities. And I love the sense of seeing the play, but also knowing that there are people around. So it's like a very communal experience, and it's not I don't see one negative thing about that in a way. Like, I think most of the stages in Stratford are quite interesting and good and good to work with. So in this case, I was aware that we don't have we don't have a big budget for this theater, so you have to be really careful how you create the design that is efficient in a way and that you give the actors and support the story, but you put the money where really counts in a way. In my case, I'm changing the floor a little bit, not the whole floor, but adding elements of painted panels on the floor that change from Act 1 to Act 2. And I'm using a very modern artist from the 20s, Sola Delany and Duchamp. And so that it's coming from the play, really, that in its own development was something quite modern and unique. So it was like very looking forward to what may happen and what the world is going to be. It's strikingly relevant at this point because it talks about people who come to Paris and the only goal is to make money. And they finding oil in Paris, and they will destroy anything that is beautiful about the city to get to the oil. And a bunch of people led by this wonderful woman, the mad woman from Chaillot, are rebelling against that, and they win. And the characters could be written now, most of them. And we know politically how potent that topic is at the moment. So in a way, you know, like it's just two acts. One act is in cafe and maintaining that sort of modernist look with a lot of colors and patterns, or that can travel between the set and the costumes. And I have quite a bit inventory in the air, so that in the first act that's supposed to open up the space, and in the second act there is a different element that is in the air flying that's supposed to close the space, because in the second act we are underground. So that's the
trick of it.
So that's how I did it.
Exciting. And Sean?
Well, I guess for the back eye, the that in the John Patterson, the floor is probably, it's the dominant architecture. So how you deal with the floor is really important. But as Teresa mentioned, you have to be aware of sight lines, and you can't put a lot of stuff on the stage. So when I was doing some of my research into the original play and into Dionysiac rites, one of the things that kept popping up was that the people who got involved in Dionysiac rites, often part of their regalia included a fawn skin, air quotes, and a thyrsus, which was a piece of a kind of a stick of giant fennel with a pine cone on top. And as I was looking at all the reference images, I kept seeing these things over and over and over again, and I thought, I wonder what we can do with a thyrsus. How many things can you do with a thyrsus? And so I started playing with that idea. So we basically have a series of holes in the floor in specific areas where all of the women, the Bacchae women, they each have a thyrsus, and that by you can put them in the floor into different combinations. So they're very portable, but they can be used to suggest any number of things. They can be used to suggest a stage space with an entrance, or they can be laid on the ground, or they can be put in a row together. And so the other thing is that working with director Jill Kiley, she's got an amazing imagination, and I knew that if I gave her something that she could be continuing to invent and play with in a way, not unlike Lego, that she could change her mind in the rehearsal hall, they could discover things in a rehearsal hall. So basically, the set is very simple. There is a section in the middle of the stage that is a colored section, and then there's a few holes here and there where you can put these thyrsi in place and take them out and move them. And the costumes that they're wearing are also in a way like scenic elements, because they have costume pieces that will be used. There are sections where the chorus have choral odes, and so in looking at research for who those people are, one of the things that was an influence was looking at Sufi dancers and people spinning. There was another wonderful series of images by Damien Hirst and Alexander McQueen where there were these amazing dresses that they took photographs of with these high-powered fans on, where you see the fabric becoming very sculptural and very beautiful. And in the course of this play, one of the questions I had to look at is, what is frenzy and what are the rituals that these women are engaged in? And this idea of moving fabric became something that, again, could be controlled by the actors and could take up a lot of volume or could be very compact. And so they're costumes, but they will, in a way, also almost become scenery, but everything ultimately is portable and movable. And also everything is something that Jill can play with in the rehearsal hall.
So does it seem to hearken back to ancient Greece in terms of the style of the look of it all, or does it, the language is very contemporary, being adapted by Anne Carson. Is it sort of both places at once? Is there a sense of that in the visual style?
When you read her words, which are amazing, you know, she has words like car. I mean, there are some words that are very contemporary. And so most of the world is a world that you could believe today. And if you actually start looking, say, at fashion on certain levels, you can find, you know, dresses that have been influenced by an idea of something that might evoke classical Greece. So some of it I just made up because that's fun. And some of it, there are moments of things that evoke classical Greece, but there's also people wearing Birkenstocks. So it's a kind of an invented hybrid. But mostly that's because it's in relation to her language. And you know, the people speak that using contemporary words, but they speak in rhythms that are heightened and stylized, and the story itself is a pretty extravagant story in a lot of ways. So it, in a way, doing a play like this is really wonderful because you have to sort of invent everything. And it's not like you're just trying to reproduce a historical era. And it's not just modern dress either. So it really is kind of something that evokes but doesn't necessarily exist anywhere else.
I thought we would also talk a little bit about balancing your teaching practice with your design practice. And I imagine that being pulled hither and yon by a big company like the Stratford Festival would be challenging in terms of finding that balance. What's your take on that, Teresa?
I find personally that since I started teaching 17 years ago, something like that, I feel that I become a better designer. I think to articulate what I'm trying to do and to articulate how I'm doing this and to pass it to students. One of my courses that I teach is the fourth year set and costume design. I feel that if I was not doing theater while teaching, I will be cheating myself and I'd be cheating students. So I cannot see this as hindrance. I see that as sort of complement to my teaching. I show students what I'm working on, particularly when I'm doing a project parallel to their project. I had a project that started for me design-wise exactly the same as they started their project. I will ask them, of course, they had the deadlines, they had all kinds of things they had to do. And at the same time, I was doing my project, and it took a bit of guts, I feel, but I did show them how I was doing it and what I was doing and how that turned out. Particularly, the fun of that was because it was show for kids. So my problems was how to make peach grow on stage, or how to make the peach fly on stage, or how to make all kinds of things that in the text were very challenging for a designer to make it happen on stage. But you know, like you discovering things and going back to the fact that people watching the show, they have imagination, and kids have even more imagination than the regular audience. So if you trust that imagination, and if you trust the simplicity of solutions to create those magical moments, you're okay. And, you know, as I was working on it, I talked to students about all of that and, you know, where I made a mistake, where I should be better in my proposal or in my drawings. I didn't do costumes for this show, just did set. And I happy to say that costume designer was our student. So that was yet another pleasure in terms of the... I try to make it happen so that the projects are always finding time between teaching, and so it's really great actually to do it.
I sort of agree with Teresa. I've always believed that I shouldn't be teaching if I'm not doing it, and it's hard to juggle, but if you're working professionally as a designer, you have to be juggling all the time anyway. You're never only working on one project. So the part of multitasking comes with the territory, no matter how you do your work. the thing that I love about working with students is that you get to meet so many really interesting, wonderful people starting out. And I often get to work with them professionally after they've gone and started their professional careers. And that's really wonderful. And that part where you see people develop and grow, and then you get to work alongside them, it's so much fun. So I agree with Teresa, too, that they feed each other, because you know, just being a designer, it is a certain kind of exhaustion to keep doing it. And just being a teacher, it is a certain kind of exhaustion. But if you're doing the both simultaneously, then they do complement each other. And you just have to be really organized, among other things. Like, you have to be really organized. And sometimes you have to turn down projects. But, you know, before I started teaching, sometimes I had to turn down projects as well, because you never know when they're going to come. You never know where they're coming from. At the moment, I'm doing two different projects in two different cities. So between York, that's three different cities that I have to get myself to on schedule. But, you know, in 4 months, it could be a totally different scenario and a totally different list of cities or places that are not cities. So you just have to be flexible.
And in a big theater like the Stratford Festival, are your lead times a little bit longer? If they're juggling all these different projects, does that actually make it easier to have a longer lead time? Or is it sometimes better? Or am I wrong about that impression?
There's a longer evolution. So sometimes you can be starting a project a year in advance. But the thing about Stratford is, because they're running in rep, which is also one of the things you have to keep in mind as a designer, that the shows, when they're actually running, there's a one-hour changeover period where they have to switch from you know, one show to the next. So you have to design accordingly. But they're also rehearsing so many shows simultaneously. So we start rehearsing next week, for instance, but we don't open until mid-June. So that period of production is also spanning a much longer period. So, you know, that's different than... if you're working at some of the other festivals...
3 months rehearsal period, essentially.
Yeah, but because they're not rehearsing every day, they're rehearsing X number of shows. So it's a different kind of structure than a non-festival environment, where you may be working on one project and everybody's working on that until it opens. Or you're focusing on one and you've got others down the pipe that will kind of roll, but they roll in a kind of a chronological order. Here, there's a lot more sort of switching brains over a longer period of time.
Yeah, no, that's very true, that you may be working on Stratford project for a year in total, but what's very deceptive is the rehearsal process. When you look at the schedule, you think, oh, there's 2 months or 3 months of rehearsal, but then when you actually pick hours of contact of actors and director being in one room, it's less than normal production. So as a designer, you have to catch those moments when they together to see what they're doing, what they need, and somehow you think you have a lot of time, but you don't, because it's like a couple of days of rehearsal and then you're on stage, because you're on stage for a long time. So right. You have to be ready with sets and particular props that it's very important in those productions. And in this particular theater, everything has to be ready in its final stage when they start rehearsal on stage. And that rehearsal is actually quite extensive.
One of the things you mentioned was the caliber of the collaborators that you're working with. And one of the things that I know Stratford is well known for is the caliber of the costume shop in terms of and the crews building the sets and the props, that they're very high caliber. People building those those elements and the level of skill of, you know, hand sewing and things like that, that they bring a level of attention to detail that's pretty special, that your costumes, your designs are realized in a way that's pretty wonderful, I would imagine. Is that something you look forward to in working on a production like that, that the build is of a certain quality?
I think you always look forward to that wherever you find it. And there, I'm sure Teresa's the same too. I've been able to work with wonderful craftspeople in any number of locations, in any number of theaters across the country and outside of the country. But there is a certain minimum bar at Stratford that is higher, perhaps, than most other companies across the board. But I mean, it's just because it's bigger and there's more shows being built and there's more people doing it. You're not going to be a cutter at Stratford if you don't have a certain level of expertise. And you're not going to be, and they, you know, they have a dye department. They have someone who does nothing but costume breakdown. They have somebody, they have a whole team who do nothing but millinery and a whole team who do nothing but footwear. And so within each of those departments, jewelry, within each of those departments, they have become very specialized. Whereas when you work in smaller companies, there may be, you know, one person who does a bit of millinery, who does a bit of everything. So, but interestingly enough, a lot of the people that I'm working with there now are people I've worked with in other theaters, in other places. They just, you know, happen. Stratford has a kind of a manufacturing capability, which is amazing. They can make anything.
Then what also is, it feels like big responsibility when you have that team of people working with you on particularly costume design, costume production, because you feel you have to engage them in the project, you have to make them excited about the project, which is not difficult, but you just kind of have to do your work, your preparation, your research, and be very, very clear to all those departments that Sean mentioned what it is you want, what it is you expect, because they really want to be perfect, but they're working on a small section of it. And then your job is to make sure that all those little sections create the whole in the end. And it better be a good haul, so that all those hours and effort pays off. And it's pretty amazing what kind of designers Stratford attracts and how people do things there. It's always interesting to observe that from the backstage too.
Mm. Well, thank you so much for meeting with the mic and chatting, and hope our listeners enjoyed this as much as I did. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for having us here.